What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Rawcast. Jordan here. And today I have Jeff Peterson of Shieldwall Archery and Supply on the other line, and we're going to talk about arrows. So thanks for taking the time, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here, Jordan. Arrow building, it's a complicated field to talk about. There's a lot that goes into it, from tuning to how you build it and the different components that you use. But today I'm going to try to focus on the building of the arrow itself and a little bit on the components.
Yeah.
Ultimately, when you're building an arrow, the best way that I've thought about explaining why it's important to build an arrow properly, it's a lot like long range shooting. You're going to have a high-end bow, super tuned with every bell and whistle you could conceivably have on it. But if you just have your arrows kind of slapped together, that's like buying a Gunworks gun and shooting Walmart rounds through it.
Yep.
It's just, you're not really getting the accuracy that your weapon should be getting. So that's kind of why it's so important. And I like to think of it, the cone of accuracy or the cone of uncertainty, kind of like you have with an MOA on a rifle. If you have an arrow that's built, kind of the standard way, you're going to have, let's say, a one MOA accuracy, right? You're going to have a certain amount of inconsistency that's built into your whole dozen arrows or however many arrows you have there, which makes tuning more difficult. It makes just kind of getting your sight figured out more difficult, just because every arrow is flying slightly different than the other arrows in the bunch. So the idea is that you want to have an arrow that's both as straight as possible, but also that each arrow in the bunch is as close to a clone of the others as humanly possible. And that's how you shrink down that cone to get your tighter groups.
Gotcha. Perfect. Perfect. Real quick, could you just give everybody like an intro to maybe like your experience in archery and then roll into the business and what service you provide? Because I want to talk about that a bit, because you're basically building custom arrows for people.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I kind of just got running there.
No, you're good. You're good.
Good going full steam. So I've been shooting bows since I was a wee lad. I think I got my first bow when I was 6 or 7. And then I got my first legit traditional bow when I was 16. I shoot mostly traditional. That's what most of my experience has been in. And I feel like that is a benefit for me when building arrows, because the parameters to build a traditional arrow are a little bit different than the parameters you would use to build a compound arrow. And it's hard to find dealers who build, in that way, or understand that kind of thing, collars, a little bit higher FOC, whatever have you. So that's why I ended up having to go down the rabbit hole myself to build arrows, because I just wasn't satisfied with what we were able to find locally. Trying to go through the process of, bear shaft tuning at a shop where you're having them trim down a 16th and an inch of your shaft at a time and square it up and go through that whole process is just a little bit more than your average pro shop is mm-hmm. willing or capable of doing. So that's kind of where my journey got going and why I've kind of dedicated myself to doing this. We bought all of the stuff and we've been tuning bows and building arrows for quite some time. And then just decided, well, hey, there's no one around here that's doing this. Why don't we do it? So we opened up the shop. It's a smallish pro shop, a lot of trad stuff, which there's not any around here in the Oregon area that I'm at. And then again, got going on the arrow building, because I was thinking if I didn't have to, I wouldn't build arrows. I would be shooting my bow more.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that a lot of people are like that. They have more money than time, as you point out in other ways. Sometimes it makes sense to pay for something to be done right instead of having to learn how to do it yourself. So we just try to take that archery nerdery that we have, apply all that knowledge, super fine attention to detail to build the most accurate, meat missiles possible.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. There's definitely, I am one of those people that I would just rather kind of, research and play with some things, but then have somebody else build the arrow for me. I'm definitely that person.
No, absolutely. Like, I mean, like I said, you want to spend your time shooting or in the field. You don't want to spend your time tinkering in a shop forever. I mean, I enjoy tinkering, but that's besides the point. Yeah. So to that end, we offer a couple different tiers with what we do. And I'll get into that as I explain the arrow, you know, what separates those tiers. And it just kind of goes from what your standard archery shop is going to do for you building an arrow all the way through what a tournament, you know, caliber archer or someone like Levi Morgan is going to be using when they're stepping up the plate to win tens of thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. Cause the way they build arrows from the way your average pro shop builds arrows are drastically different. There's going to be a lot more attention to detail and a lot more, just thought that goes into the whole process from beginning to end.
Gotcha.
But that being said, none of it's terribly complicated. Anybody can do it. It's just a matter of whether you have the time and the tools to do it properly.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right. Well, just rolling on into this, you know, when somebody is looking to build an arrow, what are some things that they should consider, such as like spine selection?
Sure. So spine selection, it has a lot to do with, obviously just has to do with your tuning. The dynamic or the static spine of each arrow is going to be different. It's going to be a part of an entire equation to get a proper tune. So picking just the spine is not really the right way to start. The way to start would be to kind of visualize what you want in your arrow as far as tip weight, you know, roughly what your length is going to be, what you want your overall arrow weight to be. And then from there, figure out what spine is going to make all the rest of that gel. Okay. That being said, the spine charts are a really good place to start. And then, you know, you add or subtract based on arrow length and tip weights and stuff like that, which is a lot of trial and error and just having experience looking at stuff and saying, yeah, this is going to need a little bit of a stiffer shaft or a weaker shaft.
Gotcha. Okay. Skipping on down, I'm going to skip down to an Instagram question that we had that just goes along with this. So, you know, they asked the best way to determine the correct spine through paper. I'm not exactly sure what that means. And I just added to it and said, so you know that you're not underspined. Because the way I understand it, that being underspined is much worse than being overspined. Is that correct?
For a compound, yes. Compounds okay. can get away with a stiffer spine and still tune out well. If you're with a traditional bow, they're just as bad. Honestly, stiff and weak, one's not better than the other. You get away with a little bit more leeway if you go with a stiffer end with a compound arrow. But when you're paper tuning, basically what happens when your arrow is launched from your bow, you have a window when the arrow is correcting itself. It's going through the paradox. It's bending a lot, and then the bends get less, and it kind of is on its trajectory that it's going to be. So a stiff arrow is going to be one that when it fires, it's going to paradox, and as it paradox, it's going to overcorrect to the left and be too stiff, and it's going to fly to the left with its knock to the right in relation to the point. So when you shoot through paper, you put literally just a piece of paper in front of you, mm-hmm. a few yards away, a couple feet away. And when you shoot through that, it just takes a snapshot of what the arrow is doing as it passes that plane, as it were, you know, that piece of space. Mm-hmm. So as it's flying through, you'll see a tear if your arrow is too stiff. That is tearing from the left to the right, and you'll see your fletchings on the right-hand side. Conversely, it's the exact opposite for a weak arrow. It's going to be knock left. So paper tuning is just a part of the process to get your arrow and your bow dialed together. But that's what you use that for. It's a diagnostic tool.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Perfect. So let's see. Well, let's talk about choosing an arrow. Would that be kind of the next thing to go into once you have, well, your spine, I guess you should have your arrow first before you, let's say like you get the spine that you want. So just choosing an arrow in general, like an arrow shaft.
Sure. Yeah. And picking an arrow shaft is often your first step because it's a big part of deciding what your system is going to be. When I'm looking for a narrow shaft, what I'm looking for is one, starting with a brand that is going to be really consistent. Certain brands are known for being better than others. And honestly, with arrow shafts, you get what you pay for. Generally speaking, the more expensive the shaft, the more stringent the controls are to make sure that something isn't out of spec. You know, either the arrow isn't as straight as the others, or the spine is a little bit outside of the range it should be. You know, a really good company like Black Eagle, or like the Day Six arrows, mm-hmm. Easton, those guys are going to have really, really consistent arrows. And those are going to be a good place to start is with one of those brands. From there, you're going to want to figure out what you're doing with your arrow, and kind of, again, where your price point wants to be. The lower end of your price point is going to be your standard diameter shafts. Those are your classic diameter, you know, a little bit fatter, that have an insert in them, just your kind of go-to arrow. As you get thinner, the carbon gets a little stronger and the walls get a little thicker, so they get more durable. And that smaller shaft diameter is going to cut through the wind better. You're going to get less wind drag, and you're just going to get better, more consistent flight. So in my mind, I always recommend that people go down to a small or a micro diameter shaft, just because there's not really any, most things you're going to have a trade-off. You know, if you go with a heavier arrow, it's going to be slower. If you go with a lighter arrow, it's not going to punch as hard. Mm-hmm. With the shaft diameter, I don't really see any downsides to a smaller shaft. And when I say smaller, a normal shaft, you can get a micro diameter shaft inside of a normal shaft. I mean, that's how much smaller they are. So they really punch through stuff better. And there's less drag on everything. So something like a Deep Impact or a X Impact from Black Eagle, or the Rampages, which is a slightly larger shaft also from Black Eagle, the Day Six arrows, or the Valkyrie ones that VAP makes, those are all going to be micro diameter shafts. Now, that's something to consider when you're going down in size on a shaft, is that your hardware on the front end is going to change. When you have a standard shaft, you can get the whole insert and the threads from your point or your broadhead inside the shaft, and that's kind of your classic design. Mm-hmm. As you get smaller, there's not room in there to fit all that hardware. So you end up either going with a half-out system or an outsert system, or you jump all the way up to a multi-piece system where there's an inner portion and an outer collar, which I recommend personally, to really beef up the front end. But it's just something you want to think about. If you don't want to run outserts or something like that, you can't go down to too small of a shaft.
Gotcha.
So it's just stuff to consider there. But I would say if most people lean towards a smaller, a micro diameter shaft, they'd be better off in the long run.
Gotcha. Is there, so you like that, did you say triple P? So you said system?
Oh, no, it's a, as far as the hardware system on the front end?
Yeah, the one that you like.
Oh, so my personal favorite is the Day Six concentric system, because it's an inner half out. So it has a metal shank that goes into the shaft. It has a piece of hardware that sticks on the front where the threads sit. And then there's a collar that screws down onto that, and you glue the whole thing together, and it becomes a really stout, you know, steel, carbon steel sandwich on the front end of your arrow. Gotcha. But other people make similar kind of insert and collar combo setups. Ethics Archery makes one. Black Eagle makes their Focus setup, which is really pretty slick, because there's a screw in there you can loosen and actually spin the collar to broadhead tune or broadhead align your arrows. So that one's pretty slick. There's a bunch of different options out there.
Yeah, gotcha. And then, you know, the outsert system like Black Eagle runs, what about that is just not quite as durable up there?
Yeah, and anytime that you can add layers of stuff, it's going to make it more durable. So if you have an inner and an outer, it's going to be more durable than just the outer. For me, the reason I don't like those outserts as much is they're just not as much surface area for the adhesion when you're gluing it. And I tend to get separations where the front end is coming off of the arrow. And you just have to re-glue it. But if you start losing broadheads into 18 and ones, that they'll start ticking you off real quick. Yeah. So I personally don't like outserts, but that's a personal preference.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. Okay. So what would be the next thing I've got written down? Is there a rule of thumb to how long your arrow needs to be, like a starting point?
So with a compound, the shortest thing you have to have, I guess with any bow, is it has to at least be long enough to stick past your rest by roughly an inch. Because when you're drawing, you don't obviously want the arrow to fall past your rest and shoot yourself in the hand. That's a no-go. Mm-hmm. And when you're getting, you want to have a little bit of play there. So if you're, you know, you're anxious or you're pumped up during a shot, when you're pulling hard against that back wall, you can creep that bow back a little further. And, you just want to have that little room of safety. Now, one thing is, you know, if let's say you have a 28 inch draw length, you can't just cut your arrow to 29 and say, good to go. For instance, were you using an outsert system or one of the inner outer systems, they're going to go over the shaft a little bit. So you have to account for that amount of space. Otherwise, when you draw back, you're going to be pulling the arrow back onto the rest up onto that outsert. And that's going to cause your arrow to be leaning, you know, kind of angled upwards as you shoot. Mm-hmm. So what I recommend is if you don't know what your arrow length is, there's nothing wrong with it being longer. In fact, a longer arrow recovers from paradox a little faster, all things being equal. But I would dry fit everything and then mark your arrow. That way you don't accidentally cut them too short and build one arrow at a time, because it's a lot easier to have an 11 arrow dozen than it is to buy a whole new dozen.
Right. Gotcha.
If you happen to cut it a little too short.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. That makes sense. Then the next thing I have is choosing a fletching.
So for me, I like quiet stuff when I'm hunting. So I tend to prefer the lower profile vanes, like a heat vane or the AAE Max Stealth, something like that, where it's a little bit longer and the vane is a little bit shorter. Because if you have a tall vane, like a blazer or something like that, any distance from the shaft that vane has to go is going to be more movement, and movement is sound. So if you have a tall vane, it's going to flap more, if you will, than a lower profile vane that may be a little bit longer, and just keep it nice and quiet. But that being said, with a high end vane, you know, something from a reputable company, AAE, something like that, it's hard to go wrong. They're all really pretty good. Gotcha. Besides getting into some of the weird specialty stuff, you know, you don't really want to be running broadheads with a Pro Max vane. They're a little too small. I mean, there's some specialty vanes you want to be careful of, but for the most part, vanes are all going to work pretty good. The way you have them on there, as far as the orientation, helical, if it's offset or not, that's going to have a much bigger factor on the flight than this vane or that vane.
Gotcha. Okay. So let's just go right into that. The helicals and the offsets and like the right and left offsets.
Yeah. So like a bullet, if your arrow spinning, it's flying better. It's correcting against itself. And that spin, you know, just makes a tighter flight. So there's not really any reason why someone would want to go with a straight fletch with no offset. Just to explain that difference. So there's offset and helical. Helical is just using a clamp that puts in the feather or the vane itself. Whereas offset is moving the top or bottom of the clamp left or right to move it. So you can have a right helical with no offset, or you can have a right helical with a couple degrees of offset. But people kind of get those mixed up. So I like to put as much as possible on there, as much offset and helical as you can get on your vanes or feather as possible. You can theoretically slow down your arrow a little bit if you're getting real crazy with it, but I've never seen it slow it down enough the accuracy improvement from helical. As far as left or right, theoretically, if you're really going for, you know, Lee Morgan levels of accuracy, you're going to shoot your bow with no fletchings on your arrows and which way your arrows are naturally spinning. Given that most bow strings are spun to the right, most arrows come spinning out of your bow a little to the left. So if you want to not fight that natural twist, you put a left helical and offset on it, so it encourages that left twist. That being said, it's a really minute difference. If you're not Levi, you're never going to notice it, and maybe he won't even really notice it, but it makes better. Mm-hmm. I go with a right helical on everything, specifically because it tightens the points. I hate having the points get loose every time you shoot at the target, and you have to, if you shoot to the right, they'll tighten every time.
Yep. And that's why I put a right offset on mine, but that's the only reason. It's because somebody said that, well, I just put an offset on it anyways to have it spin like a bullet, just like you say, to help that. But yeah, the reason I put a right on it is because I think Aaron told me that it tightens your tips. So that's what I do.
Exactly. And I've never seen it or personally known of a guy having it happen to, but I have heard stories of guys that have a super tight left helical shooting a broadhead and the arrow actually unscrews as it's penetrating. And you end up with a broadhead off of your arrow in an animal. So that's just something I'm going to go ahead and try to avoid whenever possible. And I actually put string wax on the grooves of the inside of the points, and it helps keep everything tight as well.
Nice.
That's it's kind good... of like a poor man.
Yeah. Tight. Yeah. That's a good little tip there. With those offsets, can you talk about just real quick, since we seem to be, we're going pretty good through this, is just the degrees of offset.
So you can actually order them online. People make them. They're little, I'm not thinking the right word, not a compass, kind of like a compass you'd use in school for figuring out degree. And you can align your jig to it, give you 1-2 degrees, whatever it is. I don't personally do that. We can do that if somebody wants a very, very specific degree of offset. And for me, I just line up the vane on the arrow and give it as much as I can, while still maintaining good contact.
Okay. Gotcha. Sweet. So I guess moving on from fletching, it would be inserts and then nock selection.
Yeah, absolutely. So with the inserts, again, it's going to depend on what arrow shaft you have, as far as what your options are for your front end. I just refer to it as the front end because it ends up being a whole system depending on what you're going with. So your classic insert is just going to be an aluminum little insert. It's going to weigh about 14 grains. You also brass increase the front weight without increasing the weight of your broadhead. From there, you have outserts with your smaller shafts, and then again, the inner outer systems. The ones I really recommend are, again, the Focus system. The ones from Ethix are really good. The ones from Iron Will is another similar system. They have an insert with the Deep Six and then a collar that fits over that. Anytime you can add a layer of especially metal on the outside, you're going to have a stronger front end, because when you have that arrow impacting, that carbon is hitting that force, you know, head on. And if you don't have anything but the little piece of metal on the front of that to protect that carbon, and you were to hit a bone or, you know, miss and hit a rock, you know, whatever happens, you're much more likely to blow up the front end and ruin that entire arrow. Whereas if you have a nice beefy system with a collar on it, usually the worst that's ever going to happen, even with a really hard hit, is that you have to get a new field point or broadhead or whatever, because the broadhead or whatever bent, but the arrow and the front end of it are still super stout. And I do a lot of stumping with trad. So that's something that I pay especially important attention to. We walk around and shoot stumps and rocks and things like that. And I've never had a front end break with either the Focus or the Day 6 setup, that couldn't be repaired and kept my arrow usable.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've been shooting the Day 6 this last year. And you can ask Jake Downs while we were shooting Archery League. Like, I've hit some things that you would have thought would have broken that arrow, and it just doesn't. I don't think I've ever really broken one.
Yeah, I broke one doing a 45 degree shot on a wall, because I just wanted to see what would finally break it, and I broke the back of the arrow from the whip. But yeah, that front end becomes pretty much indestructible when you have two layers of stainless steel with some carbon in the middle. That's very stout.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very good. So let's dive into, there were some questions that I got that people wanted to do, you know, there's more equipment related questions. So I thought we'd just roll through equipment needed to, if somebody wanted to try to do their own.
So when you get your arrows, the first thing that you want to do is make sure that you, when you cut them, that you're cutting out the straightest portion of that arrow. When an arrow is made and they measure the straightness of them, they don't all measure them from end to end. They usually, most manufacturers are measuring a section inside. So you might have an awesome arrow that's really straight, and then you get to the end and it's got a little wobble in it. That wobble is going to cause issues as you're trying to, you know, make your arrow as straight as possible, obviously. So the first thing you're really going to want is a spinner. And they're really inexpensive. They're about $20 for a Pine Ridge spinner. It's just two sets of wheels that spin and sit across from each other. And you literally just put your arrow shaft on there and you spin it and you just look at the ends. And you see which end has got more wobble in it, if they both have a little, if it's straight all the way through. And then from there, you can make a determination of, you know, what end you're going to cut off to get the straightest piece of arrow out of there. And if you do it right, you can actually get away with some less expensive arrows that are maybe in a 0.005 inch straightness instead of a 0.001, because you can cut out a straighter section from the middle, particularly if you have a shorter draw length. You might only need a 25 or 26 inch arrow. 28 inch arrow, there's, you know, you got inches to cut off of from either end. Okay. So you're going to check your straightness. You're going to cut them. The next thing you're going to do is square them. And this is something that most shops don't do, but honestly, everyone should. It's really easy. There's a little squaring device that has a little sandpaper in it on the end, and you just spin the arrow in it, and it burnishes off the carbon on one end, sands it off. Until you get a perfectly 90 degree cut. And that's really important, particularly on the nock side, but also on the front end, because as you're applying force to the arrow, it needs to be applied evenly and straightly down the shaft. If you have a cut that's not cut quite at 90, you have a high end and a low end, and you're putting that force on the high end every time, instead of kind of evenly around it. Okay. And those squaring devices are pretty inexpensive too. They're more expensive than the spinner on it, which is kind of weird, but probably $30-$40. I use the Luminox Fast tool because you can bench mount it, which is handy, but also you can square the ends of fletched arrows without having to cut the fletchings off. So that would be probably the next thing. Once you've cut them, then you're just going to be assembling your front end, and mostly what you need for that is just little odds and ends. You need a little bit of sandpaper to prep your shaft. You need a little bit of alcohol. Why am I spacing on what kind of alcohol you use? You want to use the denatured alcohol, not acetone. Acetone will eat through carbon. So you want to use denatured alcohol to clean the shaft. And then there's various glues that you're going to use for different systems, either a rubberized super glue, or an epoxy or something like a hot melt. You're going to, you know, have whatever glues you're going to use for that. You'll glue all that together, and you'll want to put a point in your inserts when you glue them, because as you glue them, you'll want to put them on the spinner again to make sure that they are spinning straight in the shaft while it's glued. If you get a little bit of wobble in there, it's real easy to just twist the insert a little bit, and usually you can get that out and make it nice and straight. Because again, if you have your hardware in there crooked, you're having poor arrow flight, but also it kind of compromises the integrity of the whole thing, because force is going to be applied kind of in a weird direction. So once you've done that, really all you have to do to finish the arrow is put your nock in and fletch it. You can also add wraps to it or your arrows if you want to add some personality to the back or make them a little bit more visible. But honestly, that's pretty much all it takes to build an arrow. Now, some of the precision stuff we do, there's a couple extra steps that we use in the middle, like spine checking them and things like that. But for someone just building your own arrows, it's as simple as, you know, the spinner, square, and a fletching jig. And if you want to get crazy and do the cutting yourself, you can either buy like a full archery saw, like a Weston saw that spins, you know, it spins in a braiding disc at like 8,000 RPM and it has a whole thing to hold the arrow. But honestly, especially if you have the square, you can get away with like a hobby cutoff saw. Harbor Freight does a little one that holds that uses an abrading disc. It's about $35. If you're only doing one dozen arrows a year, that would be more than sufficient as long as you square them after the fact.
Oh, okay. So doable.
So yeah, that was kind of a run through. Oh yeah, totally doable. I mean, if you were to get all of the archer, all the arrow building stuff that we have in here, I'm just kind of mentally tabulating it, you're probably pretty close to a grand, $1,200. But if you want to do it on the budget side, you could do it sub $200.
Yeah. Dang. Dang, that's cool.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. Sorry if I got a little long-winded there. But yeah, there's a lot of little things, because everywhere that you have a joint is an opportunity for there to be to put an accuracy into your arrow. Because every joint is an opportunity for it to be slightly out of straight. Because everything can be off just a touch. So making sure that where every single piece meets is done as squarely and precisely as possible is really the ticket. Everything else is just something to help you do that better.
Gotcha. All right, cool. So with going through that, is there anything that you want to add to it? Like, is there anything that we missed?
There's definitely some high level stuff that you can get into. One thing that people should pay attention to is the spine line of their arrow. It affects more stuff than people think it does. So what happens when they make carbon arrows, they wrap the carbon around around a deal to make the hollow shaft. Well, there's a spot where the last wrap overwraps, and that's the stiffest part of the arrow. It's the spine of the arrow. So when you're building your arrows, it's best to find that spine line and put it in the same place on every arrow. Ideally on a compound, it's up. On a trad bow, it's out away from the riser. And what that does is, because the arrow is going to be flexing a point, if it's in the same spot every time, every arrow flexes the same way. And it seems like it wouldn't be a huge deal, but especially if you're shooting at 60 yards plus, your groups can really start to open up as that spine changes where that spine line is. And guys end up correcting that with nock tuning. They'll shoot all their twist the nocks until they all fly good. But really all they're doing is a kind of roundabout way of finding the spine line. So that's one of the steps that we go through here. We're building them as we find all the spine lines to make sure that every arrow is going to fly out of the bow the same as every other arrow.
Gotcha. Consistency. That's awesome. Okay. So I opened up, or I guess, is there anything else?
You know what? I totally spaced one thing. An arrow scale. An arrow scale is really important when you're building arrows, because you can have some variation in the weight of each component that you're using to build your arrows. So if you were to theoretically do it all wrong, you could have one arrow in your bunch that's 30 grains heavier or 40 grains heavier than the lightest arrow in your bunch. You know, if one arrow got the heaviest of every component and the other one got the lightest. So a scale will allow you to measure each component, your insert, your shaft, your nock, your fletchings, all of that, to figure out the combination of those components that's going to equal them all being the same. So, you know, if you have one insert that's 5 grains heavier than the average and some that are 3 grains lighter, you just pair those up with heavier or lighter shafts to make them all be consistent. So that's another thing that'll help increase your accuracy. And those scales are, again, another probably $30.
Gotcha. Is there a typical variation that, say, like a dozen arrows would be when you're done with them? Or should they all be exactly the same weight?
So your average arrow build, because I was curious about this myself and weighed a bunch of old arrows that I built. Those ones that I built, from the lightest to the heaviest, there was probably a 20 grain spread. But when we build our arrow that we're doing the weight matching for, And when we do our like tournament arrows, we did some tournament archer down in Texas. We actually will sand the components if need be from surfaces that don't matter, like the back of threads and stuff like that, to take the grains down so that they all match. We were able to build a dozen arrows had a 0.2 grain spread from either end.
Jeez.
So they were as accurate as possible. And that's the level of minutia that we're going to get these all be identical. Because yeah, is 10 grains going to make a huge difference? No. But 10 grains at 100 yards makes a big difference, especially if you're trying to tune your bow. Because if, you know, one's flying a little stiff and one's flying a little weak because of weight differences, you think it's your shooting or inaccuracy in your tune when really it's just your arrows aren't quite the same.
Gotcha. Okay. So I opened up questions on Instagram, and so we'll just go through a few of those now. The first one was input on fletching distance from the nock, and at what point do you go too far?
So for one, there's not a ton of variation in most people's fletchings from the nock. When I do mine personally, I'm up about 3/8 from, say, I'm up 3 notches on the Bitzenberger, so about 3/8. I'm fletching some arrows for Aaron right now, and he does his all the way to the back of the jig, so that brings it a little closer. In theory, the further back the fletching is, the more effect it's going to have because it's further away from the pivot point of the arrow. Which gives the back end of your arrow a longer lever arm, meaning less force needs to be applied to it for it to steer. That being said, I don't know if that 3/8 is really going to make a huge difference. You're really splitting hairs. I personally just try to make sure that there's enough clearance for my fingers, so I go a little further forward shooting trad, and that when you come back on a compound that your veins are not hitting the string if you got a really tight string angle. Outside of that, as far back as you can get it will theoretically provide the best flight.
Gotcha. Okay. Awesome. Makes sense. Okay. And this is going to be a little bit into tuning, but this guy just asked, do you tune the arrow to the bow or the bow to the arrow?
That is a great question and one that will start fights at almost any archery shop or archery range on the planet. Everyone has their own secret sauce for how they tune. My philosophy on the matter is that there is a perfect spec that your bow, you know, a compound is as efficient as possible. When the rest is dead center, when the nock height's in the right dead center spot, everything is exactly centered as it should be. So having an arrow match that is best. So I like to say tune the arrow to the bow, and then when you get to your last 5% of tuning, you can really fine tune with some things on your bow that are a lot harder to do on the arrow. So the answer is both, I guess, but I start with arrow to the bow.
Gotcha.
In my mind, even I think even compound guys should bear shaft tune like trad guys do and cut their arrows shorter. It kind of, I don't know, it annoys me a little bit with the whole just cut it as short as you can and then change your bow to shoot that properly. Because again, anytime you're going outside of that spec, you're robbing some level of efficiency from your bow.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes total sense to me. And let's see. You kind of touched on this. I think he was kind of trying to be funny, but he said, how do you make them all land next to each other? And I think that goes right along with that, trying to get your variation as little as you can between all of them when you're building.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for bang for your buck, tuning is going to get you a lot farther than having really micro dialed in arrows. The tuning of your bow and shooting properly and having good form, all of that is going to get you a lot more bang for your buck. That being said, you're never going to reach the highest levels of accuracy if your ammunition of your arrow isn't capable of achieving that level of accuracy. And having really consistent arrows really helps with tuning because, again, you're not trying to tune to flyers. You're tuning with them all being the same. So there's kind of a line when it becomes appropriate to have really, really important arrows to help your accuracy. But once you hit that line, nothing else is going to help you.
Gotcha. Okay. Totally. Okay. This last one, quick fletch, speed fletch, the good and the bad.
So, I mean, it's obviously great. They're very, you know, with the quick fletch options, they're faster for guys that are doing DIY or they're going through a lot of arrows, you know, that can work out really good for them. Personally, I'm going to say that nothing beats a vein and some high quality glue in like a Bitzenberger jig, you know, let it rest the amount of time it has. Because anytime you're going to have something that goes fast, you're usually, you know, in the chemical world, you're usually giving up strength. So for me, go with the old school classic super glue, do it the old fashioned way, and you're going to have a longer lasting result.
Gotcha.
And you get to customize your helical and offset a little bit better.
Yep. Customize that. And then you get to customize the wraps too, and the colors, and just all the things that I like choosing.
Oh yeah. That's super fun. And that's another thing that we offer. It's more popular in the trad world than it is in the compound world, but we're looking to change that with some cool options. An option that we have instead of just doing wraps is custom cresting. So that's just using paint on the back of the arrow, you know, what a wrap is actually simulating as a cresting pattern. You do total custom patterns, whatever colors you want, all that kind of stuff. And they're not as precise as wraps in a weight perspective. You know, every wrap weighs exactly the same as every other wrap. But cresting can, they're all very consistent arrow to arrow. I've never found more than like about a half a grain variance in any arrows that I've painted. But one benefit that it adds is, which isn't always super important for everybody, but you can actually add weight to the back of your arrow with the cresting. A lot of cresting, instead of being 11 grains like a wrap, is going to be 20, 25, 30 grains. Okay. Which most people want to add that weight to the front end. But one thing I've noticed is having both weight on the front and back, that arrows are correcting a lot faster. And for guys that have really long draws, shooting high poundage bows, maybe using the guillotine heads for turkeys or something, it's hard to find enough arrow. Adding some weight to the back helps stiffen it up. So it's another design option for people that are kind of outside the norm. On getting your arrows to tune properly.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So they look cool. You look old school cool on there.
Oh, heck yeah. So with that, just that little bit that you said about, you know, putting some more weight on the back, is there really any other way to put more weight on the back besides maybe change up your fletching or put a wrap on?
You could go to a knock bushing or a knock collar that would add a little bit more weight to the back, but no, not really. Which is one of the things I like about it is that it not only does it add the kind of the individuality and everything, but there's not really a better way of adding weight to the back if that's what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. And then I just thought of a fletching question that I forgot to ask: 3-fletch or 4-fletch?
So it's a personal preference thing. Ideally, what everyone's going to do is fletch up a couple of every arrow. They're going to have, you know, 3 of each different configuration of veins they want to run, and they're going to test them and see which one's group best. Most people don't do that. But that being said, I run 4-fletch because I like to run a smaller vein or feather on there. And I run the trad veins for my stuff. The smaller vein is going to have a smaller profile from the side, meaning that crosswinds are going to have less of an effect on it. But by adding a 4th fletching, you're going to still maintain that amount of drag that's going to give you that spin and steering. Because you want to think about it like total inches of feather. But roughly the same if you were to have, you know, 3 4-inch feathers as 4 3-inch feathers. It's still 12 inches, but it makes it less prone to side drift with wind.
Gotcha. Okay. Makes sense. Something I was thinking about was breaking down an arrow. Like say you got half dozen arrows from whoever, Day 6, Black Eagle, that are already fletched, and you want to start building your own arrows and, you know, doing that thing. So you want to take that fletching off and switch it up. What's the best way to remove fletching?
Buy new arrows. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Removing fletchings is a pain. We charge dearly for it because it can be kind of a colossal pain to do right. But you just take a razor blade. A dull razor blade is honestly better than a sharp one. And you're just going to do a really shallow arrow and strip off as close as you can to the shaft. And you're just going to kind of whittle that down until you've removed any of the material that's left, either the glue or, plastic from the vein. Once you've got the bulk of it off, I use a Brillo pad or maybe some sandpaper if there's some stubborn spots with denatured alcohol to strip it down. If you've got really stubborn stuff, you can use acetone, but you need to neutralize it after the fact with either denatured alcohol or water. Otherwise, it'll continue to eat the carbon. But it does break down super glue much better.
Gotcha.
That's another benefit of the wraps is if you have wraps on your arrows, it's as simple as holding them over a boiling pot of water and let that steam loosen the plastic, and then you can just peel them off.
Oh, nice. Okay. That's good to know. All right, man. Is there anything else you think we missed or you want to add?
No, I mean, it's such a deep rabbit hole and I've already rambled enough, but honestly, just if people can focus on that consistency from arrow to arrow and making sure that each part is as straight as possible, the rest of it kind of comes. And buying high-end components, I would really encourage people to, if you're going to spend money on gear, like don't skimp on arrow shafts or broadheads or something like that. The better the component, not only are you going to get better individual performance, but those companies vet their production processes much better and reduce those variances. So you're paying for that consistency.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. I really like what you said at the beginning that, you know, the reason why arrows are important. I've always found it kind of funny, going and getting a brand new bow every year and then just swinging by the arrow rack and getting what color, you know, getting the veins that you like the color of that are in the, you know, like a dozen of arrows and just buying them. And then that's just what you're going to shoot. You know, there's not much more thought that goes into it beyond that.
Yeah. I mean, and as a guy who builds arrows, it's frustrating, but it's also a nice opportunity to educate people because for a lot of people that don't know any better, they have a hell of a lot of accuracy on the table that they can buy basically, just by upgrading their arrows.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Jeff, is there anything else you want to add?
Not much. Just, if you guys want us to talk to us about arrows, get anything built, you know, our website, Shield Wall Archery Supply, we just have a contact form on there. Custom arrows aren't really conducive to like a nice web form for ordering. So we talk through everything with people. If you have any questions, even if it's not about stuff we're doing, we're happy to educate people. We're on Instagram at Shield Wall Archery. And then mine is personally Jeff _ Danger _ Peterson. Cause my middle name's Danger. And, any questions you have, we'd be happy to walk you through the various tiers of, you know, service that we do and the options that we have.
Perfect.
And, one thing I want to add with the tiers, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I know I went through this whole thing about how complicated and time to get your arrows built this way, but we've streamlined the process and gotten stuff down where it's really not that much more expensive. We have like your normal shop arrow is going to cost you $3 to $4 to have built. We charge $350 for what we call our hunter grade, which is probably where most people, you know, listening to this would want to be because it's not as kind of anal retentive as the tournament arrows. It's only $750 to get your arrows built with the spine aligning and the squaring and the broadhead aligning, all that kind of stuff. It's really only a couple bucks more. So if people want to give it a shot, it's not too bad.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds really good. I'll be probably getting a hold of you here before too much longer.
Hell yeah.
Perfect. All right. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for hopping on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yep.